Live from Radio Catskill, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. We've got a lot of news to get to because it's only Wednesday and it's already been quite a week. On Monday, you may recall, new Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem joined an ICE raid in New York City. Then later that night, the Trump administration called for a pause on federal funds, throwing the country into chaos. Coming up, I talked to the New York Working Families Party for their take on both of these actions. And we've also got the latest on Camp FIMFO, the town of Highland, the Tustin Pavilion, and a new local nonprofit focusing on local women's health. Ruby Rayner, the River Reporter, joins me in the second half of the program. But first, the price of eggs is still high, and one of the big reasons why is bird flu. And breaking news this afternoon is that this avian flu has been found in Ulster County. A flock of roughly 50 chickens and ducks on an Ulster County farm was struck by avian flu, the illness causing the deaths of all but two of those 50 birds. The Ulster County Department of Health confirmed the presence of highly pathogenic avian influenza, also known as H5N1 or bird flu, at the farm. New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets recommended euthanizing the remaining two birds to prevent further spread of the disease. The farm owners and a veterinarian who visited the property are also under surveillance by Ulster County Department of Health for potential symptoms over the next 10 days. Ulster County Public Health Director Eve Walter said the people working with poultry should consider wearing personal protective equipment when working close to the birds, and she emphasized that all residents should avoid contact with sick or dead birds. Sick or dead backyard poultry should be reported to New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets Division of Animal Industry. Get ready, I have a phone number here. They're at 518-457-3502. That's the New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets Division of Animal Industry, 518-457-3502 if you have a sick or dead backyard poultry, or you can also call a local veterinarian. Now, an update on one of those stories that we opened with yesterday. As you may have heard, President Donald Trump's budget office today rescinded its memo freezing spending on federal grants. The organization Democracy Forward released a statement saying, quote, "Facing legal pressure from our clients and in the wake of a federal judge ruling in our case last evening, the Trump-Vance administration has abandoned OMB's ordered federal funding freeze. We are proud of our courageous clients who represent communities across the nation for going to court to stop the administration's unlawful actions," end quote from Democracy Forward. The White House claims that the confusion over the federal freeze was due to the courts and the news media, not the administration. White House spokeswoman Karoline Leavitt emphasized that although this particular order was rescinded, the Trump administration will continue its efforts to, quote, end the egregious waste of federal spending. Meanwhile, Senate Democrats are taking a bit of a victory lap, calling a news conference this afternoon to talk about the outrage that they say was caused by cuts on critical programs that included those used by police and firefighters. And Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said that many other programs would have been impacted as well.
Did President Trump know that he was destroying Puerto Rico's assistance program, leaving a million Americans hungry? Did President Trump know that he was essentially shuttering community health centers, rural hospitals, food pantries? If he didn't, Democrats made sure he learned it real quick.
Senate Democrats also said that they are under no illusion that the Trump administration will continue to try to make these big sweeping changes in federal programs, and the senators say they will be vigilant in looking at any potential impacts. Schumer says they know that this fight is far from over.
They're still trying to do this. Now, they felt the heat from the American people. We helped explain to the American people how bad this was, but they're going to keep at it. The executive orders are still there.
Among the responses to Monday night's memo, as well as the Monday ICE raid in New York City that was publicized by Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, among the responses was a statement from the New York Working Families Party. Here now to explain their response and their party's approach to New York policy and politics during this second Trump administration, joining me on the phone is the Working Family Party's co-director, Jasmine Gripper. Jasmine, welcome to the local edition.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with the press release that you put out basically on Monday during the day. Christy Noem from Homeland Security went to New York, attended an ICE raid, was posting on social media about it. And then later on that night, the Trump administration froze federal funds. Working Families Party put out a statement basically denouncing both of these actions, correct?
Yes, I think we see Christy Noem coming to New York, you know, putting on her ICE vest, her hair like freshly done and makeup well put on. And we see Trump administration treating our policy and people's lives like it's a reality TV show full of theatrics. And it's such a distraction from what he's really trying to do and all the harm he's causing. And so like his, you know, as that's happening, we see executive orders attempting to freeze federal aid that would have had a huge impact on New Yorkers, from SNAP benefits to Head Start programs to Section 8 vouchers for housing. And, you know, the Trump administration really putting themselves at odds with the people of New York. And then you see New York's leadership, or you don't see New York's leadership, taking bold action. And, you know, the governor being really soft-spoken and, like, the mayor of New York City being completely absent. We are so grateful that we at least have a public advocate who has been the only leader in New York who's been taking on Trump and ready to fight him. And thanks to her quick thinking and her quick action, along with other AGs, they were able to put a stop to Trump's horrible executive order. And so, you know, where Trump is sowing chaos, the Democratic Party still hasn't figured out a response. And yet working people, everyday people, are the ones who are caught in the crosshair. And that we can't be distracted by the spectacle he makes. We have to be focused on protecting one another and making sure we have what we need, not just to survive, but to also to thrive.
On the first point that you're reacting to, the ICE raids, but more specifically, Christy Noem coming and participating and demonstrating this, and you likened it to a reality TV show, saying basically using, you know, real people and real lives instead of tackling the issue, looking at it like it's a reality show. I think I would say, like, you know, the old euphemisms, political football, you know. But these are folks that came to power because, in no small part, because they're willing to treat this issue as a political football and score points with it. That's part of how they got where they are. This seems to be all part of the plan.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lot of what was laid out in Project 2025. I think, you know, Democrats have a larger problem on their hand. Yes, there was Trump's election and him winning the popular vote. But why that happened was because a lot of Democrats stayed home, not because a lot of Democrats decided to support Trump. And so when you really look at the numbers from the last election, Trump picked up, you know, maybe close to 200,000 votes in New York. But what actually happened was, like, Harris got about 900,000 fewer votes than Biden. And Democrats overwhelmingly stayed home. People are looking for real leadership. They're looking for bold leadership. And they're looking for real solutions. And I think the Democrats being silent or being too quiet and not taking on Trump or not having solutions or plans leaves them vulnerable for Trump to continue his reign of terror. If we want to switch up things in the midterms, if we want a different outcome in 4 years, we have to start building towards that now. And we have to start moving towards real solutions. And so we've seen Kathy Hochul even shift this year. She started out with her State of the State talking about the affordability crisis. The Working Families Party has been talking about that for years and trying to get the state to address the affordability crisis. We heard Kathy Hochul talk about putting money in people's pockets. And we're like, wow, literally we've been talking about putting money back in people's pockets. And then she lays out proposals that are not bold. And the reality of her proposals don't match her rhetoric. And I think people are tired of politicians who have rhetoric and don't match it up with reality. And so when she says universal child care, she should make universal free child care and not half-ass attempts to get us there. When she says she's going to, you know, do the enhanced child tax credit, which is actually a really good proposal, but an even better proposal is the working families tax credit. When she says we need to have affordable housing but doesn't actually lay out a plan to get us there, we have plans to get us build more affordable housing, increase housing access vouchers for people, the Tenants Opportunity to Purchase Act. there are real solutions on the table that like WFP champions in the legislature have been fighting for years. It's time to make them a reality. And so I think Democrats really need to respond with bold solutions, bold ideas, and a bold commitment to the working class, because that's who they lost in the November election.
You know, the news of the day, Monday night and yesterday, with this freezing of federal funds. I mean, any nonprofit that is getting any kind of grant was thrown into complete confusion yesterday. It was had to hold, you know, special meetings in their organization to plan what you can possibly do. And this is beyond nonprofit. I mean, also municipalities, county government, state government. I imagine millions of Americans were very confused yesterday. And I was one of them. And I was sitting there thinking, like, you know, the confusion seems to be part of the point here. How do we, this is a question I'm asking myself, so I'm going to ask you, how do we act? Because we have to act in response to the news of the day without purely reacting, you know, reacting in a way that is basically being manipulated or jumping in a knee-jerk type reaction. We have to act. We have to respond. We have to plan for the well-being of our organizations or our communities. But at the same time, you don't want to be, you know, fooled into overreacting. What? How do you draw that line? How are we supposed to thread this needle?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We need a plan. New York needs a plan to deal with Trump. We know we are vulnerable. We know he's vindictive. But we also know New York has more billionaires and millionaires than any place on the planet. And we have a massive budget that's on par with other countries. And there's a way that New York can sustain itself through this crisis and to be less vulnerable. And so we see Kathy Hochul, one, refusing to even name Trump. So I'm like, are you fighting against him or not? Are you going to mount up a defense? We see her also saying, oh, I don't want to raise taxes. And that's not a signal to you and I or working class people who are paying taxes. That's a signal to the ultra rich that she's trying to protect them. And I think this is a moment where we can say to the rich in New York, hey, we need you to pay a little bit more. Just a small amount more can create enough wealth for New York to shore up our budget, to make sure we can be more sustainable and we can have a plan to help keep New Yorkers housed, to keep New Yorkers safe, and to make sure New Yorkers have what they need. It would be a catastrophe for our state if people who were relying on Section 8 vouchers all of a sudden lost those vouchers and ended up on our streets. It would be a catastrophe for our children if Head Start programs all of a sudden closed their doors. We need to have a plan. We need a leader in the state who is proactive and is willing to take on Trump. We are grateful that Tish is like ready and willing and able and to do advocacy through the courts. We know that's going to be necessary throughout this entire administration. While also we need to shore up our budget. New York is actually in a healthy budget right now. We have a surplus. And part of that surplus is because we raised taxes on the ultra rich a few years ago. And the billionaires in New York are only getting richer. they're only getting wealthier, while the rest of us are still struggling. And so we need our state leaders, while they're doing the state budget right now, to actually take up raising revenue and making sure that we have the resources to protect New York and to keep us safe and sustain us through this vulnerable time.
Part of why I wanted to talk to you, because, you know, behind the scenes and in my own life and in my own head, I've been asking a question, where are the Democrats? Like, where are they? And I wanted to ask you that, but you already answered that. This is what we've been talking about. I kind of want to turn that around for the Working Families Party. And, you know, but with the Working Families Party, for some folks, it'd even be like, well, what even is the Working Families Party? They might not even be aware of you. So just to make sure that people are aware of the Working Families Party, but more specifically, I'm curious, what leverage do you have? How are you approaching things on the ground in New York? Are there working family parties, you know, representatives in Albany? And if not, how are you, you know, leveraging any kind of advocacy that you're trying to accomplish in Albany? Where is the Working Families Party right now?
Yeah, New York State Working Families Party is all across the state. We have chapters, we have leaders and members all across New York, and we are building political power for and by the people. We are the political party of workers, of nurses, of teachers, of students, of tenants. That is who the Working Families Party is. We have been around for 25 years. We are literally a political party with a line on the ballot. So when you go to vote, you'll see Democrat, Republican, conservative, and working families. And because of fusion voting in New York, a candidate can appear on more than one line. And so Republicans tend to run on the Republican and conservative line. Democrats tend to run on the Democratic and maybe the Working Families Party line, but they have to ask and seek our endorsement And that usually comes with commitment. So when candidates seek the endorsement of the Working Families Party, they have to complete our questionnaire. They have to come in before our chapters, answer our questions, you know, make commitments. And we vet them. Are they actually committed to fighting on behalf of working families people? Are they committed to fighting against the ultra rich? Are they committed to making people's lives easier and better? And if they say yes, and we're values aligned, they get the endorsement. For many Democrats, they are seeking that party line, especially if they're in a purple district. It can be the difference between winning and losing. We saw it in the battleground congressional districts where they flipped from red, from blue to red 4 years ago. And this year they flipped back to blue when the working families line was in play. They were more likely to win. And so candidates do compete and contend to be Working Families Party champions. And so we are in Albany. We have a state-led team. I'm based in Albany myself. We convene elected officials on a regular basis, and we strategize about how to move our agenda through the state legislature. And at the same time, our chapters, our members, and our leaders are engaging in advocacy, whether it's directly lobbying their elected official, whether it's participating in an advocacy day and showing up at the Capitol, or making phone calls to community members or to elected officials. We are doing it all. And so we are an advocacy group. We are electoral powerhouse, and we have been around for 25 years and growing in power. We're going to contend in executive races across the state this year. So the New York City mayoral, the Albany mayoral race, the Buffalo mayoral race, potentially Syracuse. We haven't made up our mind yet, but we might play in that race as well. And so we have WFP champions across the spectrum who are from the local city council to their county boards to state ledge and to even statewide races. And so we will continue to build our electoral power. Our goal is to win governing power, right? That WFP champions are not only have a seat at the table, but they are the ones controlling the table. So we're growing our majorities and our number of electeds in the Assembly and the Senate every year. And we hope to have a majority soon. So Democrats have a majority, but we want working families champions to be the majority of those in those houses as well. Right. And we think we can get there.
We're
on track to get there.
Okay. We've only got about a minute, and this is where I would just like to say, looking forward ahead to the next year, and I think that's one of the things about this week, the news that we encountered, the local and regional impacts from Trump administration actions kind of wakes everybody up to this is just the start of this. We're kind of standing on a precipice, looking out, seeing, okay, there's going to be a lot more of this coming. What are you guys looking at from the Working Families Party? What would you advise people to keep an eye out for, just in terms of issues or actions that you're concerned about, that you want New York workers to be aware of and be prepared for?
Yeah, if you are not plugged in, look for the Working Families Party. Go to our website, follow us on all the social medias to stay up to date on all of our actions, our events. We will move in real time as threats become real. We will mobilize and protect our people. We will hit the streets when we have to. And we will also use the levers of government to make sure we're protecting New Yorkers. And so stay tuned and stay connected. We're approaching this fight as defense and offense. We have to protect past wins. We have to protect each other, and we will do that. And we also need to win things to help working people, like the Working Families Tax Credit, universal child care, and affordable housing. And we'll be advancing that agenda in Albany. And so there's lots of work to do, and we just need more people to continue to work with us to get it done. And so anyone who considers themselves a progressive or just wants to fight for their community should plug into the Working Families Party and get connected to a local chapter in your area.
Okay, and you're saying stay tuned, stay connected, and I will say then to you, stay close at hand too, because we'll bring you back on to talk more about this all as things develop. New York Working Families Party co-director Jasmine Gripper, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Late in the day on Monday, President Trump's budget office, which is called the Office of Management and Budget, it reports directly to the president, they put out a memo, a really short memo. It was just 2 pages, but it essentially exploded in Washington the minute it went out.
I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
And The Daily is coming up in just 10 minutes here. Boy, Local Edition's flying by. This is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being with me right now. It's time to get the latest news from our area from the River Reporter. And for that, we turn to the River Reporter's own, Ruby Rayner. Ruby, welcome back to the Local Edition.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And we're just getting updates on all sorts of things that we talk about. So why not? Let's get an update on Camp FIMFO. What's the latest?
So the latest on Camp FIMFO is that the draft environmental impact statement of the Camp FIMFO project application has been, the public comment period on that has been extended until March 11th. So this means that the public can continue to submit comments about the proposed project's draft environmental impact statement since March 11th to be considered by the Highlands Planning Board. And folks can email their comments on the Camp FIMFO project's environmental statement to the Planning Board, vba@townofhighlandny.com. And that was a decision that the Planning Board made after there was a lot of calls from objectors to the project, one of which was the organization, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, who requested that the Planning Board extend the public comment period for this project to give people more time to weigh in and say what they think and how they feel about the environmental impact statement.
Okay, yeah. And again, just to remind people, this comment is specifically about the environmental impact, right?
Yeah, exactly. The environmental impact statement is part of the application process for the Camp FIMFO project. And so the public comment is for folks to be able to comment exactly on what the applicant has prepared, which outlines each component of the project and the potential environmental impacts of that. And then the applicant, which is Northgate Resorts, would or is planning to do to address those potential environmental impacts. That's been one of the major things about the project that has raised concern from residents and organizations like the Delaware River Network, has been how will this project, which is renovating Pinatinny Campground in Berryville to a resort-type place, how will all of those new additions impact the environment?
I know you keep an eye on what's happening at Sullivan County Legislature, and that's where you learn that there's a new nonprofit that's based in Narrowsburg that's going to be serving the county, helping out with women's reproductive health programs. What do you know about this?
Yeah, so the new nonprofit is called the Field Office, and Liza Bennett, who is an employee of the Field Office, presented to the legislature and letting them know about some of the work that they were going to begin doing. The organization is based in Narrowsburg, and they're aiming to look at a slew of pressing social issues and design programming around them and have kind of a front-facing artistic event after tackling each of these different social issues. And the first topic that the Field Office is looking to discuss and talk about is menopause, the period in life where individuals who menstruate stop. And, you know, Bennett went into an explanation and talked about the full process and how sometimes conversations around the topic of menopause are difficult to have, but how they really, this bodily thing that a lot of people go through takes up a large chunk of their life. And so really want to welcome and foster these conversations as an educational tool for people in Sullivan County. And menopause falls under the umbrella of larger topic of reproductive health, which has become far less available and difficult to access in Sullivan County.
So moving on to the next story, I know you also keep an eye on Highland, Town Highland. There's always things going on there, and now residents there are calling for a petition to be signed, and this would trigger a whole referendum. And does this all come back to this issue about whether or not the town's buying certain properties?
Yes. So this referendum, permissive referendum, which might or might not take place, is all has to do with the town board's recent decision on June 16th to purchase the building at 564 State Route 55, which is right next to Town Hall. And there's residents who are calling on federal residents to sign a petition for a permissive referendum, which is if signed by 5% or more of the electorate, will require a public vote to be held on whether or not this purchase should happen. And depending on that vote, whatever the outcome is, the planning board, the town board will then be required to follow that vote in regards to this purchase. And there's been a lot of strong opinions on both sides. And so residents are trying to sign a petition to see if they can get 5% more of this electorate to sign it and then put this purchase to all of the town electorate to see what they all think. And then the town board will be required to follow that outcome.
Is this something that towns often do? Is this something that people can force a referendum vote like this?
Yeah, I found the idea of the permissive referendum. It wasn't something that I had seen at other town boards in my coverage. And I looked into it, and not all town board votes, so not every vote that a town board decides on is eligible for a permissive referendum, but certain town board decisions are eligible, and that's according to a New York State town law. So it's not just this town board in Highland that can do this, it's across New York State municipalities. And those votes that are eligible for the permissive referendum is anytime a town board decides to sell or lease a town-owned land, that's all of New York State that the electorate in whatever respective town can then trigger this permissive referendum. And then certain towns have other instances where they allow for a permissive referendum. So in this specific instance, it is allowed because it's the town purchasing a property, which is subject and to a permissive referendum. So we'll see what happens with and if the petition that has been started will in fact gain 5% of the electorate's signature in order to then move to the next step, which would be actually putting the purchase of this property to a vote.
Now, how about town of Tustin? You're keeping an eye on what's happening there too, right?
Yeah, so the town of Tustin, not much news, but there was for about a year and a half, there was conversation back and forth at the town board about a pavilion structure at the Tustin Multi-Generational Park. The board had finally moved to, after like a year and a half of talking about it, whether or not to do it, to build the pavilion in October, and it was supposed to be done by Halloween. It has still yet to be completed, so the process continues to go on, but presenting to the down board was the Delaware Valley Job Corp instructor, Josh Canfield, and he said that the students who are actually working to build the pavilion for the town, were out on winter break and the winter weather has been very cold, but that they're going to get back to work. There's about a week's worth left of construction to do, and then the pavilion should finally be complete. So the project still remains ongoing, but will hopefully be closed out soon and in time for the warm weather and for people to use the pavilion.
Yeah, we know the projects take time, but I also am pretty sure that there isn't like necessarily, not like people are standing out there in the freezing cold lined up waiting for the pavilion to be able to use it just now. But it's good to have that update on the timing. But, at least now we got some news. We have some idea when it'll finally be done.
Yes. And I have not seen anyone waiting for it to be done outside, but hopefully it will be done in time for people to enjoy it in the warmer weather when it does arrive.
Okay, well, thanks so much for going over the news with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's all the time that we have for the local edition tonight. I want to thank you so much for being here with me. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back again tomorrow night. We'll have more news for you. We'll check in with Phil Pantuso of the Times Union. Coming up at 7, it's a retro cocktail hour, kicking off our night music. But before that, we have more news immediately following this show with The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeffersonville Bake Shop, open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, and after-school snacks. Also featuring olive oil, ceramics, and other handmade items by artisan makers in Palestine. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.